This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. I love that music.
Yeah, that's the influence of Slider.
Yeah, definitely.
Can be felt everywhere. Anyway, Barnaby has returned graciously.
Yes. He found a little bit of more time for him.
In his busy schedule.
Yeah, he's a busy guy,
you know,
for sure.
Most interesting man in the world when he's not designing the space
right.
shuttle.
Can't claim that one, guys.
Well, it's all right. You seem to be having your hand in a lot of other
things.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I did have a mini vehicle that was one of mine being used to simulate a space shuttle recently.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about that. That's
kind of odd. A lot of interesting history there. Old-timey AAers know the Facetmobile, my own weird creation. And I was designing a two-place version of that, which I called FMX5. And about 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, the FMX5 design was used to build a balloon-launched UAV.
Okay.
By a company called Near Space Corporation in Oregon. And the mission was to bring payloads back from high-altitude balloons. So they basically needed something light, simple to build with lots of volume. Gee, I know how to do that.
Yep.
And so we took basically my design for the two-place Facetmobile and built it at about 6-foot span, literally foam and monocoat.
Okay.
And the basic idea is when you put a payload up on a balloon for a long time, eventually the balloon runs out of gas or drifts to where you don't want it. You want the payload back. Well, they were just dropping them on parachutes. Which, you know, when you're in the middle of the Coast Range, or, you know, if it's a military application, you're giving the bad guys your cool stuff. So they built these things as gliders. And so we had this very interesting program. It was originally called Talon Topper. Now it's called High Altitude Shuttle System. And so we're basically building mini shuttles that are basically Facetmobiles. So one of the things that was amazing to me is I originally designed that shape to fly, you know, at 8,000 feet at 120 knots. By the time we were done, we were at 100,000 feet going Mach 0.7, and we actually had gliding at 50 knots equivalent airspeed.
Oh, my goodness.
At 90,000 feet, you're at 0.7 Mach number.
Right.
Okay, and we actually had two of them dive supersonic when the control system malfunctioned, and both of them recovered and made it home.
And survived.
We had one that did a split S from 100,000 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
At about 85,000 feet, it was going Mach 1.1 dead vertical.
Oh, my goodness.
And at 75,000 feet, the control system figured it out and pulled hard. And so it did kind of the aerodynamic equivalent of an emergency bat turn.
Yeah.
It pulled 8.5 Gs.
Wow.
And by 70,000 feet, it was stabilized at 50 knots and it came home.
It was all happy again.
Unbelievable.
And it didn't come apart, which amazed all of us. Which shows you how lovely this low aspect ratio, very stiff structure is, because it was not made out of very high quality material.
You didn't have any problem with, of course, you didn't have any sensors on it to detect skin heating or anything like that.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, Mach 1 for a brief period doesn't get you very hot. Now, if we got Mach 3 or Mach 4, it would probably melt it into a blob, but we weren't... You know, and that program went for a while, and then it kind of faded away, and then it came back. I mean, if you watch, Air and Space Magazine had an article, I think, about 6 months ago. Because NASA is now starting to look at the air traffic control implications of gliding reentry vehicles.
Right.
Mm.
And they wanted to simulate it. So they took one of these baby Facetmobiles, and they put it up to 100,000 feet on the balloon and launched it and flew it down through the ATC system using the transponders that they were thinking of doing for the...
Okay. This is autonomous, or is it remotely piloted?
Oh, no, it's completely autonomous.
Wow.
I mean, and even with a very inexpensive autopilot, it was hitting the center line we were landing on the taxiway at Tillamook. And so it was one of the interesting things during flight test. You know, we had a camera that was looking out over the nose. And, you know, you're looking for the vehicle, and you go inside the trailer, and you're looking at the feed down from the camera. And, you know, you're looking, and it's, there's the airport. And you're watching the feed, and there's this white thing getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger in the field of view, and you realize that's the trailer I'm sitting in.
Here it comes.
Here it comes, right? It's like looking at the missile homing in on you.
Yeah.
And then you stick your head out the window of the trailer, and here comes the vehicle, phoom, down onto the runway, because you're parked on the side of the runway. And
wow.
And
so you had retracts, you had brakes, you had everything.
Well, it didn't have retracts. It had no landing gear.
Belly landed. Okay.
But it was a glider. And the interesting thing is with aspect ratio 1.5 faceted little airplane, we were getting a max lift to drag ratio of over 8.
Wow.
That's great.
So they love that design.
Oh, yeah.
How much payload could you carry?
About 30 pounds.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
And the side effect for me, of course, is I got lots of flight test data.
Exactly.
Quantitative data.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because if you look at it, in a funny sense, here we had something that started as an EAA home built that's now helping the space program.
Right.
And, you know, once again, you sort of see that here. I mean, if you look down the end of the field, you've got Blue Origin's new Shepard booster, you know, and you realize that kind of charred-looking thing up there has been to space 5 times and back.
Oh, that's flown 5 times?
Yeah, that booster was flown five flights.
Wow.
Now, you know, it's a first stage, so it's suborbital. But, right. Yeah, they flew and recovered that thing 5 times. So I think that may be the first actual spacecraft ever here at AirVenture.
Right.
So once again, you see all these interesting technologies all over the field.
And I'm sure as he walked by, he thought, oh, I bet that FMX-5 would fit right on the nose of that thing.
Especially after those glider tests. Jeez.
Who knows? But, you know, I mean, where I want to go with it, obviously, is I still have hopes to, before I'm too old to appreciate it, build the two-place superfast mobile. And, you know, I've evolved the design one pass beyond Dash 5 because the original FMX-5 was designed before the light sport rules came along. Because we naively believed, you know, we flew the original Fastmobile here in 1994, and we were thinking we were going to bring the FMX-5 in 1996, and here we are in 2017, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
You know, but the typical home builder story about there's unfortunately other things you have to do in life.
Yeah, life gets in the way. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I say unfortunately, but an awful lot of them are wonderful things, you know, raising 3 kids, you know, and a lot of other good stuff, but, you know, you can't give 100% of your effort to that next home-built airplane as much as you would like to.
Well,
but you know,
the wife certainly wouldn't like it.
The dream continues.
You know what
he said, fumbling that serve on purpose.
What cracks me up is you were talking about that out-of-control recovery vehicle. You're saying 6-foot wingspan, 30 pounds of cargo on board.
Yeah.
And you pulled 8 G's with it, and it stayed together and exceeded the speed of sound.
Yes.
That's a heck of a radio control model airplane.
Yeah, and you know, none of that was intentional. Actually, during the test program, we were trying to figure out initially how hard we could pull on the thing.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, because we didn't have any... And at that point, we hadn't gotten to 8.5 G's. We'd gotten to 6 G's in one evolution. And that was the one vehicle we lost because it had had a hard over, control hard over, and spiraled down. And they eventually found it in the Oregon Coast Range, impaled on a tree.
Ooh, ouch.
And so we had one of the all-time great lines in a flight test program because we were saying, well, you know, how much can we pull on this thing? Well, we don't know. What's the highest G that we could have seen in flight? And there's a guy named Marius who was one of the flight controls engineers. He said, on the one that went out of control, we saw 6.5 G's. And I think it was intact when it hit the tree. And so we actually wrote that on the board, and it was up there for the rest of the program. It was intact when it hit the tree, and with Marius's name on it and the date.
Oh, that's funny.
That had to have been a tremendous amount of fun. What were you using for a wing spar in it? A piece of aluminum tube?
There was no spar. You know,
all stress skin.
It was stress skin. I mean, it had a couple of bulkheads, which were, I think, 10-pound density urethane foam, and then skins with monocoat, foam skins with monocoat.
Oh, geez.
And I think there was a little bit of plywood here and there to pick things up.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, since then, they've actually made molds, and they're making them out of glass. So they're monocoque fiberglass.
Okay. So they're shooting for Mach 2 now.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, no, I think they're very happy to stay at 50 knots if it would only do so.
Right.
And the control system has gotten better over time. I mean, we were learning. It was a test program.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as with all test programs, there's sometimes things don't go exactly as planned.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's that wonderful yogiism you need to teach every engineer. That in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, but in practice, there is.
Yeah, a lot of difference.
You know, and then one of the great chief engineers I worked for, a gentleman named Irv Walland, you know, he used to say that the thing you have to worry about is the thing you don't know that you don't know.
Exactly.
Unknown unknowns.
Yes.
Yeah, Donald Rumsfeld used to talk about those. We call them unk-unks.
Yeah.
You know, because those are the things that will bite you because you really don't know you should be looking for them. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go on an orderly engineering program, there's the things we know we need to pay attention to. And we're pretty darn good at finding those and taking care of them. It's the thing nobody thought of.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's always one of the things you have to be aware of when you set out on doing a new and radical configuration, is your fundamental level of understanding isn't as good as conventional practice. You know, when I teach, one of the things I try to get my students to understand, innovation is great, and I'm all for it, but conventional practice is not conventional because the old guys were stupid.
Right.
Yeah. It's conventional because it works.
Right.
And, you know, one of the great virtues of doing an evolutionary design off a conventional concept is you know most of what you have to take care of. And then when you get out to the more radical things, you know, you are taking more risk. It's worth it as long as you do it in a careful way. And obviously, you know, you, from my history, you know, I have no dislike of radical configurations on airplanes.
Yes, that's for sure.
But it is, you know, there is an element of additional care that's required. You know, but as long as you do that, hey, let's go for it. Let's build more weird airplanes.
Right. And please include all unforeseen problems in the scheduling.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is no such thing as a schedule in such a program. You just keep going.
Yeah.
And, you know, but, you know, it does reemphasize the need to pay really good attention to safety and progressive testing and making sure you have all your safety systems working and not being reckless about it. So,
or having an area that's large enough that it doesn't matter where it comes down, nobody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, but if there's a pilot in it, there's one person who
is
a little bit more intimately interested in the results,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's definitely got more tied into it.
Yeah, he's very well invested in this.
Yes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to our buddy here, Barnaby Wayne Fan. I'm Fast Eddie.
This is Digital Dave, and you're listening to EAA Radio.